is Joe Storlene. I'm a graduate student at St. Cloud State University in St. Cloud, Minnesota. And together with my advisor, Dr. Mitch Bender, and Dennis Fuchs of the Stearns County Soil and Water Conservation District, and Tim Shimoleski of the Stearns County Environmental Services Department, I'd like to present to you today on a project, on some work that's ongoing in central Minnesota related to the closure of abandoned manure storage basins. I'm not going to be sharing a whole lot of results with you today, rather presenting the information on our project and getting that information out, disseminating it, and we highly encourage any feedback or comments you have on our project, which may be of use to us. To give you a little background, Stearns County is located in the central part of the state. We have the highest number of farms by county in Minnesota, we have the highest density of dairy cattle, and we have, Stearns County is home to 2,570 registered feedlots, so a fairly ag-intensive county. Over the past decade or so, there's been a decline in the number of animal agriculture producers in Stearns County, as well as throughout the entire state of Minnesota. And with this decline in the number of producers comes an increase in the number of abandoned manure storage basins, and potential exists for these basins to affect water quality over time if not closed properly. To give you a little background on the current closure process, Minnesota feedlot rules require that within 1 year of ceasing operation, the producer is required to notify a feedlot officer. Typically, that's a county feedlot officer. The closure process is about to begin. And that consists of removal of the residual manure as well as the manure contaminated soils from the basin. And both the manure as well as the contaminated soils must be land applied based on agronomic rates. And then notification must go out once again for the inspection to see you've excavated down to native soils. And then you may begin the backfill process, grade and level the land, prevent ponding, and vegetate the area. In conversation between feedlot officers as well as conservation staff throughout the state, there's been a noticeable lack of participation by producers in this closure process. And if it isn't obvious, the operators are facing a large disincentive to comply with this process, as it requires the large input of time, money, and other resources they're not willing or can no longer afford to stick into this operation. So the objectives of our study are going to be to evaluate soil and groundwater quality at 8 abandoned manure storage sites in Stearns County. And with this information, we're going to be assessing the risks posed to human health or in the environment at these sites. And overall, that's going to give us a nice baseline to evaluate the effectiveness of an alternative closure technique utilizing phytoremediation. And our species of remediation that we're going to be using is going to be reed canary grass in this study. And it's going to double as a forage resource for the producers participating. And 2 of the sites are going to be turned into wildlife pond or wetland restorations as desired by the producer. You can see the 8 sites located there throughout Stearns County. These sites were selected via lottery in the summer of 2006 and were sampled approximately between November 2006 and September 2007, with 1 site in the upper right corner there just closed last week, and we have scheduled to sample that next week with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. To paint you a little picture of what these sites are like, the majority of the sites have not been active for 3 or more years, with only 1 site being active up until the closure process. 2 of the basins were concrete types with a rest earthen style. The manure held in these basins consists of 3 beef cattle sites, 3 dairy sites, 1 swine site, and 1 swine and dairy mix. And as mentioned previously, 2 of these sites will be converted into wildlife ponds. And the excavation and closure process starts off very similar to the normal process where you excavate down to the native soils. You can see quite a difference in some of the pictures here, the contaminated soil versus those native soils. However, in our study, one unique part, we're going to be stockpiling those contaminated soils off to the side temporarily and continue to excavate down to the native soil. And then we're going to be pushing in the berms of the basin and backfilling with that soil, and then leveling it out, and then we're going to be reapplying the contaminated soil back over the top of these sites and vegetate that with our reed canary grass. So essentially the topsoil is going to be that contaminated soil from the bottom of the basin. And once the process is complete, you're barely going to notice the basins on the landscape whatsoever, except of course for those wildlife ponds. And those are closed very similar to the closure process I just stated, except that the very bottom contaminated soil from those basins were not excavated as to preserve whatever liner had formed over time. We wanted to gather as much information about these sites as we could to begin developing a sampling plan and overall information for the project, and included soil survey information. Surveys, actually, our survey crews went out to the sites, and aerial photography, topological maps, NRCS case files, and most importantly, communication with the producers themselves. And that set us up pretty nice to begin our sampling. And in this study, because the funding was provided by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, they also allowed us to use their GeoProbe unit as an in-kind, as well as the experienced staff with that unit. As far as the sampling array goes in this project, we wanted to be sure to hit three distinct sites at each location. We wanted a background sample somewhere unimpacted by the basin, typically up gradient, quite a ways away from the basin. And we wanted a sampling point directly within the closed basin, and then somewhere downgraded, potentially impacted by the basin if groundwater flow were happened to be flowing that direction. And you can see, as far as soil sampling, we collected soil samples from 0 to 0.3 meters, kind of a topsoil representation, and 0.3 to 1.2 meters, and then so on in 1.2 meter increments, as that's the size of the cores that were extracted with the GeoProbe unit. And we went down to approximately 6.1 meters at each of these sites. Or if groundwater was hit before that, the confining layer, then we stopped there. And in one situation, we did have some odors coming from that site directly in the basin. At the last course, we plugged another couple cores just to make sure we got below that. As far as the top view of our sampling array, you can see those max depth cores, which I just spoke about, are in the center in the dark blue, with replicate cores for statistical purposes taken on either side. And those were just taken of the 0 to 0.3 and 0.3 to 1.2 meter increments, approximately 2 meters on either side of that max depth core. And then we all had another replicate core taken back to St. Cloud State University for analysis. That was taken just to maybe 10, 20 centimeters away from that max depth core. And that was analyzed for soil moisture content, as well as bulk density and texture. As far as the other soil analysis, we made sure to make field notes of coloration, presence of odor, moisture, presence of modeling, as well as texture. And for lab analysis, we wanted to analyze pH, salinity, total Caldol nitrogen, ammonia, nitrate, chloride, total organic carbon, as well as phosphorus. And all of the lab analysis were done by Minnesota Valley Testing Labs in New Ulm, the Minnesota Department of Health certified lab previously contracted by the SWCD in this study. As far as groundwater collection, I note, first of all, if located, because if many of these sites didn't yield groundwater by 6.1 meters, we didn't have the time or the funding to continue to search for groundwater at the site. But when we did find an ample supply, we hooked up a multi-parameter probe and took measurements of temperature, conductivity, dissolved oxygen, pH, as well as redox potential. And once again, we collected groundwater analysis for lab testing of orthophosphorus, total Caldol nitrogen, ammonia, nitrite plus nitrate, sulfate, chloride, total organic and dissolved organic carbon. As far as the assessment on the risk-based assessment of these sites, we're going to be using the MPCA's, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's, risk-based site evaluation process. And this process was originally developed for their Superfund and voluntary investigation cleanup programs, but in consultation with their staff as well as ours, it was determined it would be the best fit process for the study as far as sampling guidance goes, and the comparison of the risk-based comparison based on background analysis. And it was developed after existing federal and state guidance and incorporates many of the elements of risk-based corrective action developed by the American Society of Testing and Materials. However, we came across one problem in that risk assessment through the soil leaching pathway. The MPCA used a KD, or disassociation constant, approach to their nitrate, or their soil leaching pathway. And that's particularly problematic with nitrate, one of our main contaminants of concern, as it's soluble, as well as the primary factor for its movement is going to be that redox condition. And so it was determined by their staff, as well as ours, that we're going to be using the USDA's NLEAP model to model our nitrate at these sites. And it was developed specifically for nitrate and is better tailored to local conditions. And we do realize NLEAP was not designed for a site-by-site basis of nitrate modeling, but we're working closely with Luke Stew at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture in developing a plan that we can set up our soil leaching for this model. As far as remediating the sites, we wanted to take a look at previous studies dealing with contaminants of similar material, and those consist of stabilization of contaminated soil from below animal waste lagoons with barley, phytoremediation of irrigated lagoon water on poplar trees, phytoremediation of groundwater, at an inorganic nitrogen fertilizer spill site with alfalfa, as well as various bioremediation techniques using water table management or glucose supplements. However, for this study, we're going to be utilizing reed canary grass, and we chose it for several reasons. First of all, reed canary grass has the ability to grow in a variety of soils. It is both flood tolerant as well as drought tolerant. It has a winter hardiness, particularly important to our Minnesota climate. It has a significant capacity to remove nitrogen. Studies have shown more than 445 kilograms per hectare. It has a deep rooting potential with roots growing in excess of 2.7 meters. And finally, it's going to double as a quality forage resource for the producers in this study with a fairly high yield capacity. And when I say quality forage, I do mean the low alkaloid varieties, the modern varieties such as Paladin and Venture. As far as preliminary results, we're unable to determine the absolute risks at this time based on the preliminary data. I have a poster presentation Wednesday from 4 to 6, which does contain some soil and groundwater data that we've collected. And as mentioned, one of the sites is going to be sampled next week. And a statistical analysis as well as data modeling with NLEAP is scheduled for this winter. And further investigation is required to evaluate the effectiveness of the alternative closure technique, as phytoremediation doesn't happen overnight. It's going to take some time to establish and start taking those nutrients out of the ground. And in summary, we hope we can develop and demonstrate a manure basin closure that will be a lower cost to the producer as well as reduce environmental risks. We hope to provide an alternative closure method which can easily be implemented by landowners, resulting in hopefully more basins closed quickly and reducing potential long-term impacts to water resources. And finally, the protection of groundwater resources from manure-borne contaminants may have a tremendous impact across the entire state of Minnesota. Thank you.